Welcome back to another 3P podcast episode, season 3, episode 4. I'm your host, Josh Fromowitz, and join with me my other co-hosts,
Alex Castle,
Steven Benazzo.
Boys, we got a special show this week. We got a special guest, super agent David Kanner is joining us. Can you just tell the listeners what that's like? What is your everyday
Oh man, it's amazing. I've never worked a day in my life. I really represent some really great human beings. And so I've never really had to do, a normal life. I've been an agent for 25 years. Coincidentally, today I had a meeting down in Coconut Grove where I met my first ever client, and always drive by the gas station where I met him and take a picture, and brings back, you know, where I was and where I am and where I want to be in this industry. And so there's no normal day. You know, today is a ton of FaceTimes and phone calls. We just signed a new client, which I'll break on your podcast. Dontrell Hilliard, the running back from the Texans and the Browns.
Congratulations.
Hired us maybe 2 hours ago, and spend a lot of time dealing with kind of the off-season plans of guys. We have 6 or 7 guys in the pre-draft program, you know, getting ready for what would have been the combine, which is now going to just be pro days due to the cancellation of the combine. So we're moving some guys from different places. They're getting ready to go home at the end of February, beginning of March, or go back to their schools. Tomorrow I'll be flying to Dallas, Texas to see our highest draft pick this year, which will be Asante Samuel Jr. from Florida State. Literally, Jaquan Bailey just left my house from Iowa State. He was here to pick up one of our sponsors, sent a bunch of boxes of some stuff. Kyrese Tonga, the defensive tackle from BYU, is coming over later tonight to grab the same things that Quan just got. So there's never like a normal day. It starts early and finishes late. If you like sleep, this isn't the dance for you. If you don't like being very, very responsive and always having to kind of be on a lot, this is probably not the industry for you. And if you don't like if you like stability and you want stability, this is 100% not the business for you. There's no stability in the sports agency industry. You're dealing with a guy like me who owns the company, manages the athletes, has no runners and recruiters and middlemen and investors and partners. And, you know, we've got 40 guys in the NFL, which is a pretty solid number. I think we're number 2 in the entire industry of non-conglomerate agencies. And I have no other co-agents with me on any of the 40 guys in the NFL. So there's a lot of work. There's a lot of lives at stake. There's a lot of relationships. It's a pretty constant 24/7 thing. And again, I've never worked a day in my life. I'm probably the luckiest man in the world, but it's an incredibly cutthroat and competitive business. And there's not a lot of honesty. There's not a lot of ethics. And so you have to try to find your way to do it the way you want to do it and still try to be successful, because you're competing against mega agencies that will do it for 0% or 0.5% or 1%. The standard for your listeners is 3%. And that's the maximum fee allowable in the NFL. For you, Alex, since you're an NBA fan, go be a basketball agent. There's a lot more money in that. Fully guaranteed contracts. Go be a baseball agent. A lot more money than that. You know, go be a hockey agent. Go be a FIFA agent. Go be a soccer agent. There's only like 50 in the entire United States. In the NFL, there's about 800. And there's probably about 30 to 45 agents in the NFL that represent more than 20 guys. I think once you get past 30, it drops down to maybe 15 or 20 agents, not co-repping with multiple agents on the same rep agreement. Darren Heitner and Sports Agents Blog, which I'm sure you guys follow, they do a good job of kind of listing the top 10 agents based on number of clients. But what they don't do is they don't break it out to like the mega agencies that have 4 agents on the same rep agreement to try to push up their numbers. So anyway, with that said, it's an incredible life. I've been an agent for 25 years. This is all I've done since my first year of law school. And I've done about $1.8 billion in contracts and some of the highest paid guys in the history of the sport, you know, going back to the mid 90s until now. And you know, knock on wood, as a superstitious Jewish kid from Atlantic City, New Jersey, I never imagined, you know, the life that I would have. My mom was on welfare when I was a kid. You know, I had two pairs of pants growing up until I was about 8 years old, and she started to increase her net worth and get better jobs after my parents divorced when I was really young. And it's a beautiful life. I'm the luckiest man in the world, and there's not a day that goes by that I take that for granted, to be honest with you.
David, it sounds
like we're all going to cry. We're all going to shed a tear because I made it. No. And so it's just an awesome sport. Football's, you know, you follow football, you play fantasy football, you buy the sweatshirt or mom and dad bought you the sweatshirt. It's the best.
Absolutely. And it sounds like you've had an incredible journey to the spot where you are today, you know, working hard and really getting to where you are. And as you mentioned before, your company manages a whole slew of NFL players. And I think something that people don't know with agents is what their involvement is, not just with the contracts and
getting, I'm listening, by the way, I'm just getting the text messages, Alex.
No, you're good. And so my question for you is, you know, aside from the contracts and, you know, figuring out where these players are going to end up at the end of the day, what is your role as an agent in the player's everyday life?
So we're every day, all day. For example, today I just had lunch with Von Bell, met with him and his day-to-day management guy from the financial side, talked about basically everything from his acquisition of a new property to literally putting him on a vacation next week. So booked the flights for him, got our corporate discount for him at the resort that he's going to go to, talked to him about his off-season training program. We're working on some PT stuff with him just to make sure that he's in peak position to go to the Pro Bowl next year. Had some discussions with his team as well today, talked to his team's defensive coordinator in front of him and then separately from him. So we're a life management company, Alex. We're not just a sports agent where you're going to come in, I'm going to negotiate your contract, you're going to pay me 3%, and then I'm going to talk to you 3 or 4 years from now. We are full day-to-day with every one of our guys. We do every single thing from concierge services, like shipping their car for them, hiring them a mover, finding them a place to live, getting them an Airbnb when they go on a holiday, or getting them an Airbnb when they're going to a different city. We're negotiating constantly on marketing and endorsement deals. I just signed Jadon Mickens, who's the returner for the Bucks. I just did his Disney deal in case he ends up being the MVP of the game or Disney chooses to pick him to go to the game. So there's legitimately, it's not like a sales pitch or some bullshit. It's a legitimate everyday, all day, constant thing in all sincerity. And so we do a lot. We try to differentiate ourselves from other agencies by really being hands-on in managing components of their lives that most agents just don't care about, right? They don't care about it because they don't make money out of it. And so a majority of the time, most agencies, it's always, hey, on to the next, on to the next, on to the next. And what I realized, and I hope I'm not giving away any secrets here, is that the business makes babies. It really, really, really makes babies. So the better you do for players, then the better relationships you have with them, they help you get other players. They talk about you in the locker room. Guys see them wearing your hoodie or your hat or your shorts. They ask about the other agents. They ask about deals. And so if you do right by your existing client list, a lot of times your existing client list does right by you. We're unique. We're about 85% of our existing clients. That was my ringtone, by the way, Darth Vader March, Death March. About 85% of our guys were their second agent. And so that means that guys have fired their agents and hired us. And so, you know, it's a special part of the business that only a few agents are really good at. And a few agencies are really good at. And it's something that we've really kind of honed in on a hot spot and a sweet spot of trying to get really great people who happen to be good football players. It's not really necessarily going after the greatest football player in the sport. It's about finding the right guy that kind of fits our ethos and our mores and our concepts and our strategies, and then go and execute, right? Like, you have to be able to produce. You have to be able to get good deals for good players, and you have to be able to get exceptional deals for good players. And so we've been really lucky to get a lot of guys paid. Some of them I've never even met. I mean, I represent three guys out of the seven guys we have on the Browns that I've never met. We have a center on the Broncos that I've never met. We have Jamie Collins, who I did a 3-year, $30 million deal with $20 million over the first two, hired me on the first day of the pandemic, and 4 days later free agency started. So I've never met him. I haven't traveled almost at all this season. Interestingly, I went to more college football games this year than I have been in the last 7 years combined. But that's because the Boca Raton Bowl was down here and the national championship game was down here. So it was a no-brainer. But I didn't sign anybody from Ohio State, sadly. But, you know, it's one of those things, or Alabama. But it's one of those things where COVID has changed the landscape a little bit. Doing a lot of this, a lot of Zooms, a lot of calls, a lot of FaceTime chat and interfacing with our guys. And it's difficult. You know, you guys are back in college. It's not easy, you know, trying to be safe, trying to mask up, trying to keep your family safe, or at least in my case, keep my family safe. And hopefully we'll get a normal sports season come the fall with a vaccine, and hopefully everybody, you know, stays healthy.
Now, David, you mentioned how a lot of your clients, you weren't their first agent. They had an agent previously, but then they fired them.
Sure.
And I could think of a big name. He's one of your clients, Xavier Howard.
Xavier Howard just did that. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
By the way, for everybody who doesn't know, ladies and gentlemen, Steve Bonanzo, our prerequisite non-Jew of the four Jews that are now on this Zoom, we had to have an Italian to balance out, because Steve, you, especially with the stash that you're growing, it's beautiful, by the way.
Thank you. I just got it cleaned up today.
It looks great. Fresh haircut. I think you have makeup on. You look so good. Compared to the other kids on the show and me, we look like shit. You look like $150. We look like 38 cents. But let's be real. All the ladies at UHA are going to die when you come back. Just so you guys know, they all go to the University of Hartford. For a long time, it was a joke school. No longer. It's a very, very good program now. Very, very good school. But its nickname had always been UHA, because in order to go there, it was laughable. And I know a lot of people that graduated from there. They've done very, very well in their lives. So God bless you all. Hartford, blowing up city, explosive city. A lot of new development. My roommate from law school is a lawyer there. Don't ask me to get him an internship with his law firm. So I'm not going to ask him that. But anyway, Steve, going back to, can I call you Steve?
Yeah, hey, call me whatever you want. Yeah,
Steve. Stephen. Well, I don't like to be called Dave, so I'll call you Steven.
It doesn't matter. I just, when they Zoom asked me to put my name, I just always put my full name. But, you know, you can call me Steve.
I'm surprised. Mine says David Kanner. Usually I put DEC in case I sneak into a Zoom call that I'm not allowed. Like the other night I did a Pro Bowl call. Maybe I should admit that, whatever. It was a waste. But I did the Tuesday night, I did the Pro Bowl call because they sent out the link. So I was like, hey, I'm not in the Pro Bowl, but let's see what's going on here. And Chris Carter and John Randall were there, you know, two Hall of Famers, two amazing men. And it was really fun to hear them talk. And obviously X is in the Pro Bowl, but I put DEC. So maybe, I don't know, the settings on this one, or you guys found me out. But to go to your question, yeah, Xavier Howard was a guy, second round pick out of Baylor, obviously led the NFL in interceptions this year. Depending on who you ask, you know, Dolphin fans will say he's the best corner in all of football. Rams fans will say it's Jalen Ramsey. Bills fans will say it's Tre'Davious White. Patriots fans will say it's Stephon Gilmore. But I would assume that most NFL general managers would know. It's Xavier Howard. Part of it is obviously he gets challenged now that they paid Byron Jones a ton of money. You know, Xavier got challenged more than if he just had a regular guy. Byron's an outstanding corner as well and got a huge contract. But also Xavier was a guy that we were in the running to represent after he terminated his first agency. And we just couldn't really agree to terms. We liked each other. We had a good relationship. But I'm difficult because I'm kind of set in my ways and I kind of do things the way I want to do them. And I have a plan for everything. I have a lot of notes here on my desk that you guys can't see that, you know, allow me to focus in on things and get, you know, kind of really tunnel focus. And X had his ideas and concepts and plans. And at the end of the day, a couple of years ago, it just didn't work out. No hard feelings. He ended up getting a multi-year contract extension that is incredibly light, to be frankly honest with you. It's not a good deal. It wasn't a very good deal when he signed it. It wasn't a good deal before he signed it. It's not a good deal since he signed it. And obviously he's outplayed his contract. He's outperformed his contract, and we'll see what happens.
Now, does that happen often in the league with players where they are sponsored by, represented by one agency, and then they leave that one to join a new one? Like, how often does that happen?
I would say probably 60 to 70%. It's more common than you think, partially because there's a pandemic around the globe, but there's an epidemic in the football representation business. And the epidemic is a disease that I very much would like to get rid of, which is mega agencies signing 20, 30, 40 guys every draft and treating them like the toilet paper at Costco. And so what happens is the smart ones realize, hey, I'm client number 84 and my agent doesn't even know my girlfriend's name. My agent's never met my kids. I just had a brand new baby. My agent didn't even send me a gift. Hey, I tore my ACL and I've got to go have surgery. My agent didn't even help come want to scrub in or fly to see me or build a real relationship. And at the end of the day, there's really good agents in this industry that are part of those mega agencies, but those mega agencies are also doing the players a disservice because there's a churn and burn component, which is sign as many guys as possible and then let the sport, you know, sort them out, sort the talent out. And so for me, I try to prey on that weakness of the agencies. I don't have partners. I don't have investors that I have to answer to. I'm able to kind of move in and out in the shadows. You know, I'm wearing all black for your show. My phone's all black. My ringtone is the Darth Vader Death March. There's intentionally being done. I don't mind being the bad guy. I'm not a bad guy. I'm not a bad person at all. I think I'm an okay father. I think I'm an okay husband, and I'm an exceptional sports agent. Maybe that's twisted. It should be the other way. But for 25 years, I've been able to kick these guys' asses, and I plan on doing it for another 25 at least. And I like it. I like being able to get clients away from other agencies. And then what happens is you actually do right by them. You know, you get Jamie Collins a massive deal at age 31. You know, you do DeMarcus Lawrence's record-setting deal. You do Olivier Vernon's record-setting deal. You do Sean Smith's record-setting deal. And guys start talking. Guys start seeing, you know, hey, I don't need to have six agents on my rep agreement. And, oh, wait, hold on. They put this guy on a vacation. Hold on. They got him a safari in Africa, and he only paid, you know, he got a free Escalade or whatever the things that we've been able to do. I mean, DeMarcus has a free Bentley. And so I think that the smarter players eventually gravitate towards quality representation, but it comes at a price. It comes at a price, Steve. Steven, you don't get quality representation to cut your fee. You don't get the best of the best that's doing it just because they want you to be one of 30. You have to be elite. And what I say to our clients is you are custom fitted. Our representation is custom fitted for each guy. It's not one of those things where it's cookie cutter Walmart representation or Costco representation. We're a bespoke custom tailor, and we bring to the table a lot of unique aspects. We have the only full-time analytics department in the NFL with our own database, with data that we input, we create, we generate. It's run by a rock star of a human being, Brian McIntyre, out there in Boston, Massachusetts, outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And Brian's been with me since 2010, and he's invaluable to me and my clients in the day-to-day. But he's been given free rein to really be a creative component of this industry that really nobody else has. Like, you know, yesterday or today, you'll find out that another agency hired a contracts analytics cap guy, but they're just looking at PFF, which is trash. They're just looking at bullshit grades from people that don't understand, you know, was it cover two? Was it man zone? Was it press? Are we talking about two man? You know, are we rolling safeties? What's the defensive line doing? Are they running a tech stunt? Are they bringing a loop? What, you know, what's going on? Are they just playing straight front? So things like that you can't get because you're not inside the building. And so what we do is we get really detailed and intimate with our guys our presentations are incredible. And then the teams see what we do. Our analytics packages for each one of our guys that are going to be a free agent this year, and we've got a very, very heavy class of free agents to be, the teams get an analytics package on each one of those guys. And what that does is that prevents kind of misinformation. When you have four agents on your rep agreement, who's the leader? Someone's got to make the bed. Someone's got to clean the sheets, and someone's got to sleep in the bed. Well, with DEC management, that's me. DEC, David Evan Canner, me. It's my company. And I'm the agent. So there's no cross-contamination. There's no pollution of information. And more importantly, we're able to really try to hone in on good humans that want better representation. And it's out there. You just got to make a phone call. You got to shoot a text message. You got to ask. And fortunately, after 2 years, Xavier wasn't happy and ended up making a switch. And his representatives, his lawyer, his financial advisors, marketing people and what have you, his team, I ended up being the last man standing. And hopefully, God willing, we have a great long future together and a big new contract eventually.
Well, for both cases, sorry, Josh, to cut you off.
No, you're all good.
No, but it's really just like.
Pray for it. We need all the help we can get. You know, I don't want to talk about it in the media, and please don't make this the headline on Twitter. But, you know, players deserve what they deserve. And the sport doesn't care about you. And you've got to get all you can, as much as you can, as quickly as you can, because just when you think you got five more years, it's over. It's not like baseball or hockey or basketball or soccer, where going into your mid-30s is really easy. Or kind of, most baseball players don't even start getting good until their late 20s. It's different in football. You can be chewed up and spit out of the NFL by the time you're 25 years old, never to return.
Yeah, I agree. The players deserve what they should be getting. And two guys you mentioned, Marcus Lawrence, Olivier Vernon, were among those guys who were able to contribute and help get them the money they deserve by landing them historic contracts. So can you talk a little about what went into that and how you were able to land those mega deals? And they're currently two of the highest paid defensive players currently still.
So I'll go Olivier first. You know, Olivier was a weird deal. He hired a big, big, big agent. I think the biggest in the NFL based on number of players. And he knew very quickly that that agency was probably going to be the wrong fit because they did a lot of early deals that ended up not being great deals. One of the problems with early deals is, yeah, you take some money off the table, you take some risk off the table, but as soon as the contract signed, it's already outdated. And so for me, I was always, especially with the Dolphins organization, I was kind of in wait and see mode with Sean, with Paul Soliai, with Derek Shelby. And Olivier saw that. And he got to know me through a third party, through one of his teammates who I represented and had met me a couple times. And then he literally called me up and he's like, hey, I fired my agent. You're in my top 10. And I was like, top 10? I was like, huh? You're going to meet with 10 other agents? Like, what are you, crazy? Like, there's not 10 great agents in the business. It's like maybe six guys that I would let my kids be represented by. And so I went, I did a presentation with him, and I said, and I say this very often, I say, listen, I don't know how it is that I do this, and I really don't, but I am a market maker. I'm not a guy or an agent that waits to see the market and then let the market come to us. I'm very comfortable with my numbers, with our analytics, with our stats and our data and the things that we create in seeing the NFL from a 10,000 foot view and also obviously being on the ground level. And so I said, I'm going to predict the future. You know, Don Aponte and Mike Tannenbaum, who are no longer with the Dolphins, and I have a very up and down relationship. It's certainly more hate than love. They find me to be very difficult. They do not like me, I think, personally. And they know that my objective is to destroy the team. That's the truth. I'm not getting hired by players to give a shit that the general manager wants to come to my house and have a glass of wine. Like, yeah, of course I have a lot of friends in the sport, but their job is to get the best players for the least amount of money. And my job is to get the worst players the most amount of money. And so I said to Olivia, and I remember like it was yesterday, I said, you're going to get franchise or transition tag. I'm like, I've already been here. I represent Paul Soliai. They franchise tagged him. Then they basically lowballed his deal. He left to go to Denver. We'd agreed to terms with the Broncos. And as we were on our way to the airport, he said, no, I'm going into the Dolphins building right now. I'm signing whatever contract they give me. Needless to say, I was super fucking pissed off that day. And I had to eat a lot of shit. I had to call Don Aponte, but I had to do what my client wanted. He didn't want to leave Miami, didn't want to leave the Dolphins, didn't want to leave his coaching staff, didn't want to leave his friends, his teammates, et cetera. So he played out that two-year deal, and then the Dolphins lowballed and lowballed and lowballed, and it got a little bit nasty, and eventually the Atlanta Falcons convinced him to leave, and he got a four-year or five-year, $33 million deal at 31 years old, and guys are like, holy shit. You know, 31-year-old nose tackles that just played two downs don't get that kind of money. I mean, they don't get that kind of money anymore. But this is 2014. And so Olivier fired his agent, hired me after he met with all the other people. And I said, you're going to get transition or franchised, and you're going to make at least $14 million a year. And I remember his eyes got like big, like, oh, $14 million or what? And I was like, no, that's the low. Like, that's what I'm going to tell the Dolphins. If they give us that, we'll do a deal. And they were stuck on like 10, 11, 12. And it got nasty. It got ugly. Joe Philbin was still the head coach of the Dolphins at that time. And, you know, they did the same thing that a lot of teams do. What happened to Josh? Josh, what is going on with you?
My phone just fell.
Now you're in outer space. Are you high right now?
Nah.
Good. You should be. So, anyway, I mean, you're wearing a Jets sweatshirt. Oh, I guess it's the new Jets. So it's
the new Jets.
It's Robert Saleh. Let's go. Anyway. I have a coach on the Jets staff, so I hope they win. And I have a lot of good friends in the building, and Salah's a superstar. So I digress because I'm ADD. And so I said to Olivia, I'm like, look, you know, it just be ready for nastiness. And I told the Dolphins, like, I'm ready for whatever you throw at me. They ended up putting the transition tag on him. We went to the combine, had a very, very negative meeting with the Dolphins. It was not fun. I had prepared the player because I'm always honest. You know, this is where it could go. Then I had started to hear that they had just put the transition tag on to fuck with us, which is so stupid because they thought that we wouldn't get an offer sheet. So the listeners know, and so you guys know, the franchise tag, you're basically trapped because you have to give up two first-round picks. If you sign with another team, that team would have to give two first-round picks to the Dolphins. With the transition tag, you can sign an offer sheet and then the Dolphins could theoretically match it, or they'd get, I think it was a first and a third or first and a second, I don't remember. Anyway, so the objective, I guess, the whole time was to hinder his market, which they're allowed to do. Teams do it all the time. It's a dirty part of our business. And then find out that if he got an offer sheet, they would never match it and they would let him go. And that night I was at the combine. I had dinner with Adam Gase. He was the new head coach of the Dolphins. Me, Adam, a media person, and Brian McIntyre, we drank a lot and we said a lot of things that started with the word fuck. And usually the second word was you. And we battled heads and banged heads and drank and hugged and cursed and fought and screamed and yelled. And we had a tremendous difference in how I valued Olivier and how the organization valued Olivier and how the new head coach valued Olivier. And so I start my meetings the next day, bleary-eyed, red-eyed, and probably on like five espressos. And a team walks up to me and they said, hey, we're at 15. And I was like, here we go. I was like, we're right. I looked at Brian. I'll never forget as long as I live. I looked at Brian and I go, we were right. We were right. Fuck yes, we were right. Now, of course, the team could tell you they're at 15. And then when the actual tampering window starts and it's time to negotiate the deal, you know, back off the number. But then we had another meeting where a team was at 15. Then we had another meeting where a team was at 15. So now we got the market. We know we have interest. We know we have an exciting player on the market. Now we've just got to figure out a structure of a deal that takes away the transition tag. And so sure enough, on the first day of free agency, it starts at 4:00 in the afternoon, Olivier and his financial advisor are on their way to my house to sit in my kitchen while I negotiate his deal. Because I told him, you're going to have a tough decision. Jacksonville wants to send a plane. They want to literally pull up with a limo and put you on the owner's jet and fly you to Jacksonville. You know, those are big fucking deals. Schefter's blowing me up. Rappaport's blowing me up. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry media person's blowing me up. And make a long story longer, the Jaguars were at a 6-year deal for 17 a year, and the Giants were at a 5-year deal for 17 a year. And the Jaguars wouldn't budge. They just, you know, I fought with David Caldwell. John Idzik, another former Jet, was in the building, and they were just stuck on a 6. And I promised Olivia I would not do a 6. I promise all my guys I'm not looking to do those types of deals because they're all bullshit. They're all terrible contracts. Almost never any player in the NFL gets the full 6. And if they do, they do it only because the team has all the power. Don't even get me started about the deals that you've seen lately that are 7, 8, 9, 12 for the best player in the history of fucking football. And so with all that said, we ended up, he talked to the head coach of the Giants, who's obviously since been fired, Ben McAdoo, talked to Spags, and he walked in and he's like, "Hey, I'm a Giant. Let's go." And, you know, it was a record setting deal. No edge guy had ever seen $17 million a year. And I remember saying to him after I did the deal, I said, "It's funny. I have the next you. If he can stay healthy, I have a $20 million a year guy." And it was DeMarcus. You know, I had DeMarcus coming out of college. DeMarcus was actually my client right after or right around the same time Olivier hired me. I don't know if it was within 6 months or so. I don't know who was first or, you know, the chicken or the egg. I don't remember. And then, you know, I had a bunch of other defensive guys that were successful. DeMarcus's deal was much harder. He had 3 years where he was hurt most of the time. He had 2 major back surgeries. He had a foot injury. He had a thumb repair. You know, 4 surgeries. And then the Cowboys put the franchise tag on him, which was 17 and change. And I was like, "Hey, that's what Olivier's getting. That gives us the opportunity to get you the next deal. Let's lock that in. Let's sign it. And then most likely you'll play it out. You'll dominate again. You'll go to the Pro Bowl finally and get your due. And then people can't say you're a one-year wonder." And so he did that. He didn't have as good a second season on playing on the franchise tag. I think he had 10 and a half sacks versus the year before. He had 14 and a half. But I actually felt like he was a better all-around player. He played the run really well. He had some forced fumbles and PBUs and things that, you know, guys don't really care about, but I do. He was incredibly disruptive. And very quickly, the Cowboys slapped a second franchise tag on us, which for those of you that don't know or don't follow the sport, it just doesn't happen very often. Usually there's a way to find a middle ground to a deal. And we were miles apart in where we wanted to be. But the difference is when you're negotiating for DeMarcus Lawrence and the Cowboys, you're not negotiating with Adam, who's their main contract negotiator. You're negotiating against Stephen Jones, who owns the team. And to be frankly honest with you, you're negotiating against a guy who's a multi-billionaire, him, his father, and the rest of the family. They don't really give a fuck. Like they say they do. They care, which is true. They do care. They love their players. They treat them incredibly well. They have a first-class organization from top to bottom, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for what they built there in Dallas because, you know, Jerry bought the team for nothing, and it was a more of a down franchise before any of you guys were probably born. But it's a much more difficult negotiation. You're negotiating against the guy. It's the owner of the team. A lot of times when you're negotiating against the team, you're negotiating with someone who then tells you, "Hey, give me a 30 minutes, give me an hour, email me your proposal." Then he calls the GM, he calls the owner, and then the owner goes, "Hey, you have my approval to go up to 17 or to go up to 18 or go up to 20 or to go to 10 or whatever the number is." And then they come back to you, and there's a filter, right? There's a filter of information. I sat at this exact desk in March and April of 2019, literally getting mother effed, literally banging my head against the table, and then calling DeMarcus and saying, "Hey, you know, it didn't go well. And it didn't go well for a long time, for months, for literally months, to the point where I had started clandestinely talking to some teams about a trade. I had gotten a team very, very hot on potentially making a trade with the Cowboys. They were not interested in making the trade. And then Steven and I have, just like everybody else in this sport, we have a lot of respect for each other. There's not a GM that I don't respect the fuck out of or a head coach or an owner or a personnel director. I mean, these men and women work their asses off all day long. And as they climb the ladder, you know, hopefully God willing, the relationship stays very strong. Steven and I have known each other 20 plus years, 25 years since I got into the business. You know, going back to when the Cowboys were the hottest team in the NFL and everybody wanted to be a piece of the Cowboys and they were winning Super Bowls and, you know, Jimmy Johnson and stuff like that. And so eventually we had a really strong heart to heart with DeMarcus on the phone, which is very rare. And 3 hours later it was done. And it was like that. It was literally like that. You know, I remember sitting here at the table looking at the final numbers. We were able to set the record for the most cash in year one in NFL history, which I had done with Olivier. We then exceeded Khalil Mack's deal. He did a 7, we did a 5. I got my 5 years, which I really wanted. I got $65 million fully guaranteed at the time of signing, which was a record at the time. And then just like every other deal in the history of football, eventually someone beats it. So then Myles Garrett came in and beat it. And then 3 or 4 days later, Joey Bosa came in and beat both of them. And that's just the nature of the business. The money, God willing, continues to go up. The players, God willing, continue to get paid. And I'm happy for everybody that gets money in our sport. It's not easy. Now, that's David, a 20-minute answer to a question.
Hey, well, it's big, especially
those. I love watching the 3 or 4 of you text each other. Holy shit, he doesn't shut up.
Now, we love it. We want to hear more, you know. So now this guy who I'm going to talk about, because he's on my team and he's not one of your clients, but
yeah, let's do it.
It just kind of goes to the point of negotiating and getting a deal. So a guy like Allen Robinson, he signed a 3-year, $42 million deal with the Bears, obviously 3 years ago when he was coming off an ACL surgery. He has surpassed that contract with the stats he's put up with mediocre to awful quarterbacks and Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles. Now he wants to get paid. Obviously, I want the Bears to pay him, but they've kind of butted heads from midsummer to, and then they stopped negotiations throughout the regular season.
Yep.
Now things are, I don't know if they're picking back up again, but now it's time to, if you want to sign and re-sign him, then you got to start talking about it. And I just want to know kind of like the process of like, what these guys feel that they're worth and what's the reality of what they should actually get paid. I know obviously the Bears, they want to stay, you know, maybe in that $18 million range per year, but then Allen Robinson's now, I saw a report that he could want $100 million total over, you know, maybe 5 or so years and kind of get $20 million per year. So what's your, now when you go into it, how do you, are able to negotiate with the teams and with the players and on both sides saying, well, dude, you might not be able to get this high amount, but what's the number you're set at? Or like, how does that happen?
Yeah. I mean, I think that what, you know, Allen's is a renegotiation, correct? He's not.
Well, his contract technically has ended.
And they're going to use the franchise tag on him, I would assume.
That's assuming what's going
to
happen.
So, you know, again, I don't like giving out free advice to his representatives. I don't know them. But, you know, Ryan and the contract guy there, you know, they've done a pretty good job in managing the cap. Obviously, Khalil's deal, you know, was the big money deal 4 years ago or 3 years ago when they did the trade. They've paid some other guys. I think Charles Leno got a fairly good deal at left tackle. Jackson. Eddie Jackson got a terrible deal, but it looked really good. It's horrific, actually. It was announced as the biggest safety deal in NFL history, but it's I don't think it's anywhere close and fully guaranteed or 3-year cash flow. But whatever. I'm not Eddie Jackson's agent, and I don't mean to badmouth his agents. I just don't think his deal was as big as the press put out there. So, you know, Allen, I don't know, who's Allen's agent?
I knew it. I just forgot his name. I can quickly find it while you
know. It's not a big deal. But, you know, I would hope for Allen's sake that he has a really experienced representative representing him. I would assume that he's unhappy because his last deal was pretty light. I'm pretty sure he was coming off of an injury or something when he did that deal, correct?
Yeah, he tore his ACL with Jacksonville, and then
got like 13 or 14 a year, right? Which is pretty solid. He got a little bit maybe around Jarvis Landry's number at the time. So, you know, the going rate for starting wide receiver and a legit superstar one, which he is and has the potential to be, is 20 plus million a year. And there's no other way to cut it, slice it, or dice it. So, you know, he's got it. If I'm his agent, I'm looking to break the bank because he's been the bright spot on a moribund team that, you know, has an arrow going down right now, let's be frankly honest. And so you would assume that Matt and Ryan know that they're on thin ice going into next year. You would assume that it's win now. Detroit obviously just fired Matt Patricia after 3 years, AKA, hey, Matt Nagy, you could be next after 3 years, right? And I love Matt, and I love Matt Patricia. And I respect the heck out of Ryan. You've got an older ownership group there where you know, the old lady is, you know, probably in her 90s. She's 98, you know, and she's obviously handed over the reins to the family, but she still wants to win in her lifetime, very much like the Ford family, right? And you know, the old woman that is the owner of that team, I'm saying old woman is a disrespectful thing. You know, they're lifers in the sports business. And so you've got Green Bay, which 2 years in a row has dominated the division and embarrassed those teams in some games. And you got to beat them. You got to beat the Packers first, right? And they're the historic franchise in Lambeau. So you immediately have to prioritize Allen Robinson. And frankly, to be honest with you, if you're Ryan Pace, and I'm not trying to give Ryan advice, but I'll give it to him. Just please give the guy whatever the fuck he wants. Just get the deal done. Like, the way that it works in this sport is so stupid. They all think that they can find the next guy. And then what happens is they find a bunch of guys and then they get fired. And then it's the next team's guy. And unfortunately, if you want to keep your job and you have elite superstar talent, just pay him. Don't fucking fight. Just take it in the face, get beat, and you'll win on 50 other guys. There's only three guys on every team that make mega monster crazy money, right? Maybe four, five if you're super lucky. Just pay those guys. Those are the difference makers on your roster that set the tempo for everyone else. And so, you know, I don't know the Bears roster intimately from the wide receiver standpoint and who's next and what they want to do, but I do remember that they've had a bunch of horrible draft picks. I do remember that they failed to develop a bunch of wide receivers. I do remember that I've seen balls hitting hands and dropping on the floor many a time in many a Bears game. You know, it's like, oh my God, it's a hot potato or is it a fucking football? Just catch it and run. It's not that hard. Or catch it and go down. We're okay with just catching the ball, right? And so pay the guy. Just pay him. I mean, it's just that simple. There's your headline. David Kanter says, just pay every player.
Well,
I mean, yeah, I'm an agent. Of course I say that. But Allen Robinson's a guy you don't really bust balls about. He's the guy that you signed in free agency when you first became the GM, right? That's a Ryan Pace signing.
It was, yes.
Okay, it's done. It would be, if I was Allen's agent, it would be the easiest negotiation ever because I would say those exact words to Ryan. Like, listen, stop dicking me around 19 versus 21. Just get the fucking deal done, dude, because if you don't, I'm doing this deal with the guy that's replacing you, Ryan, because you're getting fired. And oh, by the way, I mean, I'm a super asshole when it comes to this. I say that to them. I'm like, and I'm going to get you fired. And I'll be the agent that is going to call your owner after the season when you lose and you suck and you're 6-10 and go, oh, by the way, he could have had Allen Robinson for 19.5 or 21.2, but he wanted to hem and haul to save $400,000. That's not his money because, oh, the cap's coming down and I got to worry about the fans weren't in the stands and the Dickas couldn't wear this mustache that you're wearing, Steven. It, you know, like at the end of the day, it's not your money, dude. These are all billion-dollar franchises. Do you want to win or do you want to get fired? That's the simple, easiest way to explain every negotiation. Doesn't mean I'm always right, by the way. Sure as heck couldn't say that to Stephen Jones because he's not going to fire himself. You can't say it to Stephen Ross if you're doing a deal with the Dolphins because he's not going to not be the owner just because he doesn't have one player. But you have to go into it knowing most teams don't give a shit about the player. And most teams literally in their mind are like, we can't lose. We can't lose a negotiation. We're going to beat this guy. We're going to get the right deal. Well, guess what? There's 31 other teams. So if I'm Allen Robinson, okay, franchise tag me. I'm not going to sign it. Not coming in. July 15th is the deadline. You'll give me a fair offer July 12th, and I might tell you to go fuck yourself. I mean, that's the reality. That's the power. Dak did it with the Cowboys. Justin Simmons did it with the Broncos. Matt Judon did it with the Ravens. The numbers only go up. I know that maybe the cap resets or comes down, and the mid-market guys, of which I happen to represent a lot of them, are going to get screwed this year. But eventually, the money will go up. And you can always do a deal. I mean, God, they saved so much money on Eddie Jackson's cash flow. The Bears have no problems re-signing Allen Robinson. None.
Well, that's why I totally agree with you as a fan.
Jersey, and you're probably his fantasy team, and you're probably
he's on a fantasy team. Yeah, I had like three leagues. He's on like three
the Mr. Robinsons or some bullshit like that. What's the name of his fantasy team, guys?
I don't know.
I was in a different league, but I had Kyler Murray, so it was Murray up offense.
The Murray up offense. That's actually pretty creative.
Yeah,
I don't play fantasy. I play real football. I play real life fantasy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But especially with like my last point to this Allen Robinson question, the Bears are, it's rumored, Rappaport, Jay Glazer of Fox Sports, you know, they said the Bears are going to be big suitors, big players in the quarterback like class this year, whether that's could be trading up to draft one of the top quarterbacks in the draft in April. It could be signing someone in free agency or trade. Either way, they expect to be big players because it relies on Ryan Pace's job and Matt Nagy's job if they want to stay.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go get a horse. Like, you drafted a horse. You don't love him. He's not the guy. Move on and get a real one.
And that's why I say you got to re-sign Allen Robinson, because if you don't, now who's your wide receiver one?
That's the point I just made. Go get it done.
You could have
said it doesn't matter what you have to do. You have to restructure Khalil. You have to extend this guy. You have to cut that guy. Go get a quarterback, go pay your receiver, and go win, or you're all getting fired. Like, that's our business. These are three-year deals. Or if you really suck, sorry, Josh, two-year deals.
Yeah.
That was a reference to Adam Gase and the Jets.
Yeah.
Just end the season, Jets.
Hey, future's looking bright. We actually have a competent coach now.
By the way, Adam was not competent, because I know him very well. However, what he needed to do, and he obviously it's hard because there's only 32 of these, he needed to take a year away from the NFL and reconsider how he handled things here in Miami. And then, unfortunately, basically all of the same things that he did here, he brought with him to New York. And it just got away very quickly, unfortunately, for everybody, for the Jets, for the fans, for him, for his family, for the Johnson family that hired him, et cetera, et cetera.
It was really actually cool to hear all these stories about Adam Gase, because we've talked about him a lot. Obviously, Josh, being the big Jets fan that he is, it's always nice to hear another side about the coaches, because, you know, the media portrays one thing, but then when you actually talk to someone who knows them and has the personal relationship, I think that's what makes sports great, is you have two sides of the story.
But then again, you now have Salah coming out saying, here's the quote, "He's an unbelievable talent," Salah said on the podcast with Chris Franklin. "There's a reason why he was the third overall pick. Just watch the tape. Production aside, just watch the player. Tremendous mobility, got arm talent, fearless, smart, and a quick, precise decision maker. He's loved in the locker room, and people adore him in the building. And I can't wait to trade his fucking ass for another quarterback that's going to be mine, and that I don't have to worry about the picadillos and the problems that he had with someone else." Because that's the part that he's not saying, right? Like, let's be honest. Like, of course, we're going to prop him up so someone will take him off our hands so he can draft Zach Wilson second overall and get a veteran guy for a two-year deal and string it out. Or maybe we bring back Maddie, the Magic Man in Miami.
Or
Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Magic Man in Miami.
Or trade for Deshaun. I'd be okay with that.
Well, yeah, but you have to prop him up.
Oh, of course.
So Cesario and the Texans want to take your guy. And again, this isn't a knock on Sam Bradford. Poor kid. I mean, he's had no offensive line help because they've gotten hurt, not because they weren't good players, but a lot of them got hurt. COVID thing, all that opt-outs and stuff. The running game was non-existent. Le'Veon Bell, Mike McGackinon, you know, destroyed. Mike McGackinon deserves far more blame than Adam Gase. Like, let's be clear. I agree with you. You know, those, and I did some of those deals with him and Adam and the team, and they didn't work out. So, anywho, Ben Roethlisberger is open to restructuring his deal, if you didn't know. Oh, really? I didn't know you weren't going to play for $41 million this year, Ben. Really? He threw four interceptions in the playoff game. He looked like he forgot to play quarterback. Are you willing to take a pick? Oh, thanks.
That caught me by surprise.
That he threw four interceptions?
No, that he's willing to renegotiate.
What else is he going to do? He's not going to go play somewhere else. He's going to get the Drew Brees deal. 1 year, $25 million, you're done. You're back for a year. And then after you lose in the playoffs next year in round one at Cleveland, you bow out and retire and cry like Drew Brees, and hopefully Tom Brady comes over and kisses the kid and throws the football, and we're good.
Well, that's what he should do because he looked awful.
Hey, Mike Mayock was disappointed in the production of his rookies today. Wow. Wow. Really? You didn't make the playoffs, Mike. Wow. Maybe you should have drafted better. Maybe you weren't meant to be a GM. Maybe you were really good on NFL Network. And maybe. I could be wrong. Maybe the owner of the Raiders shouldn't have given Mark Davis, shouldn't have given John Gruden a 10-year deal.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
Maybe the coaches suck. Maybe Gruden's group isn't as good as he thought. You know, it's like crazy. Crazy.
I still can't believe the deal that they gave Gruden. I mean, yeah, you look at his history, but to pay a coach that much money, it's just crazy to me.
Listen, I absolutely love Mark Davis and John Gruden. And I love Mike Mayock, actually. I have a great relationship with the guy. I love the guy. I can't tell you anything about their draft picks and why he's not overwhelmingly happy with them, but they didn't make the playoffs. So who's happy with the team that didn't make the playoffs? Every team that didn't make the playoffs didn't love their rookies. If they love their rookies, they would feel better about the productivity. So, you know, I'm just reading you the headlines on the Twitter machine today that are happening, you know. But at the end of the day, I mean, they traded their third round pick for nothing to the Dolphins. He never even played for them. So it's like, you know, I don't know what to tell you, but it's hard. Drafting's hard, guys. Most guys screw it up, which is why every year there's four or five or six general managers and head coaches that get hired and rehired and fired. You know, how many coaches coach 15, 20 years like Tomlin and Bill Belichick? Zero. I mean, it's those two and nobody else. So it always makes me laugh when the coach is like beating the GM or the coach being honest. Well, yeah, we watched your team. They sucked. We watched your team. They were winning by 14 with 3 minutes to go, and somehow you lost. Like, hey, you let them recover an onside kick in a playoff game. Like, there's so many factors that go into it. So this is a tough sport, man. Baseball, basketball, hockey, this is human beings. You put $15 million guaranteed in a person's pocket. Maybe he doesn't want to come to work every day. You know, maybe he's not as motivated. Maybe he was a first-round pick, and in his mind it was like, hey, I just wanted to be a first-round pick. Now I'm in the league. I'm going to get the tattoo, an NFL logo on my hand. I'm going to get the big necklace. I'm going to go to the club so I can have sex with a bunch of girls so they know I'm in the league. But I don't really give a shit if I'm in the league 5 years from now because I'm good. Like, I did what I wanted to. Then you have other guys that are like, bro, I want to get in the league, and I want to be the best. I want to do everything I can. I'll sacrifice. I'll eat the right foods. I'll eat asparagus 12 hours a day. I'll eat salads. I'll have five different trainers, gyms, chiropractors, massage therapists, massage guns, massage chairs, foam rollers. And I want to be GOAT. I want to be the best ever to play the position. It's just, it's hard to know that. You can't really do that in interviews. You can't do that by talking to your college football coach because they want all their guys to be high draft picks. You know, and it's a hard sport. This is not an easy sport. By the way, if you're Ryan Pace, going back to your Allen Robinson stuff, you can see the converse argument too. It's like, well, hey, he didn't have a huge market when we signed him. Or, hey, I need cap room because my team has a lot of holes, right? I need nine guys, not one. I need a quarterback, too, that I got to pay $35 million a year. You know, so there's arguments to their side. And as an agent, you have to be able to weigh the good and the bad and empathize and sympathize. And also, at the end of the day, be able to forget about it and move on and go get your guy money elsewhere, if that's the case.
Something that you just emphasized that I think
– Let's go, Mr. Knicks. Alex, by far, is the 100% the guy that wants to be a sports broadcaster in his career, correct? He has you have a picture of Darren Revelle above your bed.
I don't go to that extent, but it's definitely
close to it. Instead of Pam Anderson, or I don't know who the hottest girl in the world, Khloe Kardashian, Kim Kardashian, Kylie Jenner, whatever the fuck. Whoever. Anyway, instead of one of those pictures, you've got Al Michaels. You've got, I don't know, Mike Tirico, whatever.
I got Stephen A on the side. I got everyone.
could pick a lot better than that guy. But anyway.
I agree.
Jim Nance.
Oh, yeah, Stephen A. All right, Alex, your question is null and void now. I'm sorry. I refuse to answer it on the premises that you just invoked Stephen A. Smith on this phone call.
I'm guilty as charged.
Pep Hamilton will be the quarterback's coach for the Texans, for the guy that they're going to draft with the second, third, or fourth overall pick when they trade Deshaun Watson. And they'll sign a veteran. And then in 2 years, David Culley will retire or be fired, and Josh McNown will be the head coach.
I would honestly think that'd be great for him. I mean, he had a long career as a QB.
They're going to fire the head coach they just hired?
I don't think they're going to do that, but if it came to that where they ended up hiring McCown at the end of the day, I think it'd be a great story. I'm not sure how he would be as a head coach, but I know that he's dealt with a lot of different personnels and a lot of different teams. And I think when you bring in a guy like that with a lot of diversity, it could mix something up with a team that's been really struggling to find its identity. So
I definitely don't disagree with that.
So it could be a good move. The Texans have a lot that they need to work on, and hopefully this hiring will be a step in the right direction. So, but we got to see about that. But my question for you is something that you emphasize, which I think speaks a lot of volumes, is that football, when you separate it from the other sports, football is something you're putting your body on the line. You're a human being, you know, you're tackling these other guys, you're putting your body through the ringer. And when I think of that, when I think still of broken. These guys,
still broken.
when I think of these guys, these young players going through the combine, speaking to different agents, I would think that because
wait, you're talking to other agents besides me.
No.
Oh, I was gonna say, go fuck yourself. Real.
One of your listeners.
I'm the only agent in the football business. You didn't know that?
No. The only one. The only one
that matters. How about that?
Only one that matters. And When these guys are going through the process, because this is becoming a professional football player is such a big deal. Sure. What I want to know is why these players would decide to go sign with these bigger agencies where, you know, they're just one of 120 guys where, like you said, you know, their agent doesn't, you know, send them a gift when they have a kid or visit them in the hospital. I guess my question is, what's so appealing about these bigger agencies versus you, where you're a guy that prides himself on being there for their client, whether it's, you know, booking them a vacation or finding, you know, the perfect physical therapist for them? What goes into these players' minds that says, you know what, I'm going to go for this bigger agency where I'm going to be a small fish in a big pond versus what your company provides?
I mean, I can't tell you in the eyes of a player from that standpoint. I can tell you what they've told me. You know, hey, they were willing to give me $50,000 up front as a marketing guarantee. Hey, they were willing to do it for 1% and everybody else wanted 3%. Hey, and this is the most common thing. Hey, they have seven of my former teammates from Alabama. So it was like, hey, why not go with those guys, right? Sometimes it's availability, right? Like a lot of times – an agent is recruiting you that doesn't have the wherewithal as the bigger agencies. There's a lot of smaller to extremely small agents in this industry that just can't compete. Like they cannot compete. They can't do what I do. And they sure as shit can't do what, you know, Athletes First can do with 12 agents and 150, you know, clients. And so that's part of it, right? Like who you get recruited by. Sometimes you don't get recruited by good agents. I don't do a lot of college recruiting. These kids don't even know who I am until they get in the NFL and they find out, well, why does this guy have seven guys on my team? Like, well, huh? What? Where'd that come from? You know, why did this guy just get the highest paid player in NFL history who never even made a Pro Bowl? Like, how did that happen? Like, so a lot of it is that. Also, the schools do a tremendous disservice to the players, because they're so worried about the corrupt agents, which there are still some, that they don't open it up and make it easily accessible for all of the best agents to recruit the players at the school. Like, for example, if I'm recruiting at Texas, which not necessarily the best program in the country, it's historically been four or five or six of the same agents, right? And so what they've done is they limit my ability to get in touch with those guys because they don't want distractions, right? And then the players end up hiring some bum, and then they go in the seventh round when they were supposed to be a first or second because they fell through the cracks, or the agent didn't cover up the issues, or didn't know what to look for, didn't figure out the medical, or didn't figure out the skill sets that the player doesn't possess that will get him elevated in the draft or make him drop in the draft. And so there's a lot of complexities to representing players coming out of college in the draft. The draft is kind of the sex appeal and the sizzle of the NFL, where every year, every team is going to replace guys. Think about how fucked up that business model is. Like, hey, come to our sport, kill yourself since you're 5 years old, get to Division I college, become a starter, get drafted in the fifth round for your team. And next year, we're going to draft a guy that we think might be better than you, and we'll probably replace you because you're an expendable human being, just like this chair that I'm sitting on. If it breaks the leg, I got to go buy a new chair. Well, they have hundreds of bodies that they know the sport is an attrition sport. It's 100% injury sport. So they know that the guys are going to wear down. They know that they're going to need to be replaced. And let's make it a nationally televised event for 3 days when we could say to all of our veterans, hey, sorry, man, you wanted $3 million. I can get this rookie for $650,000. You're out. He's in, even though I don't know if he can play a lick until I get him to training camp and put full pads on. So the evaluation process is wrought with problems. The nature and the concept of the sport has a lot of problems that date back to the 2011 CBA extension, where teams were able to eliminate the rookie pool or significantly minimize the financial commitment towards rookies. And it made it much easier for teams to make rookies interchangeable throwaway pieces.
It's pretty sad that that's the case with the NCAA, and the fact that they block a lot of the agents. That's something that I just learned, but it just goes back to the fact that
schools block the agents because they're just afraid of the corruption.
Yeah.
They're afraid the kids are going to, you know, look for their handout and stuff like that.
The NCAA always amazes me whenever I hear something new about it. Always amazes me with that organization.
They are not very ethical or caring.
Not at all.
Great. David, I'm going to ask.
I'd be the only more corrupt organization.
I'm going to ask the last question before we wrap it up, if you don't mind.
I'll take it.
The last question I'm going to ask is a piece of advice you would give to kids, whether it's college kids or high school kids or whatever, whoever's listening, a piece of advice to people who want to get involved in the sports field and may not necessarily know how to get involved.
The sports field, I can't give you
not like, piece of like advice. Not like
I would tell everybody watching or listening, God forbid you're watching this or even listening to this by now, I hope you have better things to do with your life. I mean, these kids are amazing. But at the end of the day, like, I've been fucking talking for an hour and 15 minutes. Like, it's enough. I'm tired of myself. But I would say don't get into the sports agency industry in the NFL. It's terrible business. It's criminal. It's corrupt. It's unethical. And I love every minute of it, but I'm not one of those people. So it's very, very competitive. It's very, very difficult. It's brutal. It'll eat you up. You have to sacrifice a lot. I mean, you heard how I mentioned my family, you know, I'm not the greatest in the world at that, but I'm really great at my business. And that's disgraceful. But at least I'm being honest. Right. And so I've had to sacrifice tremendously to get to where I am and still do. And my family has to sacrifice, my wife, my kids have to sacrifice time and energy and my energy and my passion and my focus. And it's difficult. It's not an easy business for anyone, especially young people coming straight out of college looking to break in, because it's so competitive, it's so ruthless, it's so very, very difficult. And so I would say that if you really want to do this, if you really want to be a broadcaster, or if either of you want to be a GM or a scout or a coach or an agent at any sport, college, football, high school, basketball, soccer, badminton, I don't know, you know, pickleball, whatever, be prepared to sacrifice everything. Be prepared to, you know, make a little bit of money or no money. Be prepared to take out loans to survive or have significant debt, have a fallback. I can't stress that enough. I have a general counsel of my firm that was with me while he was in law school, and I really thought he would be the next me, and I would groom him and teach him, and he just couldn't close. He just, it wasn't, he didn't have the sickness gene that most of the successful agents have, where it's ABC all day long, always be closing. Not to say that that was a knock on him, or not to say that he wasn't well equipped to be successful, but once he got his law degree, I made him switch his focus to a niche component of the sports industry, which are, there are not a lot of lawyers that just focus on handling pro athlete issues. There's a lot of athlete issues that guys buy a piece of jewelry and they find out that the diamonds have been swapped and they're not all 100% the top of the top. They have baby mama drama. They have divorces, custody issues. They've got LLCs that they want to start and businesses they want to create. They've got to put together trusts for their kids or for their mom and dad to give them benefits, you know, buying houses, real estate, businesses. And he's built an incredibly successful business, way more successful than he would ever been had he stuck with me. He works with many other agents, and I've kind of thrown him into the wind, and you know, he's 10 years of crushing it and killing it, and God bless him, but he had a fallback, right? And so I would say, don't take no for an answer. Be persistent, be insistent, and be willing to make some heady, horrible sacrifices. You know, you're going to have to eat some ramen noodles for a long time. You're going to have to spend a lot of time on the road away from your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your loved one. You're going to have to spend a lot of time sacrificing the energy towards more maybe fun things, you know, playing Madden or FIFA or Call of Duty. You ain't going to get to do much of that when you're trying to be a sports agent or trying to be a head coach or trying to be a GM. You know, there's not a lot of free time. You're not going to be able to go out till 4 or 5 in the morning every night. I'll tell you my Eric Spoelstra story. So in the 90s, when I was in law school and I was still building my sports agency, I was a nightclub promoter. I ran different parties and clubs, and I'd be able to bring a lot of kids with me that went to law school with me or went to undergrad. I went to law school at the University of Miami, and you know, South Beach is 30 minutes away. And so I had a venue Thursday night, Wednesday night, Friday night, Saturday night. Monday night was one of the biggest parties. Sunday night is now a huge party night here in South Florida, especially at Live pre-COVID. It's a hip hop urban night. And we had started something similar to that at the Marlin Hotel in South Beach. And so one night I was running this party called Magic Garden. And one of my good friends, who's still a good friend of mine, who actually still works with Miami Heat, was interning at the Miami Heat. He wanted to be in the sports business. And he I think he was getting his sports management degree from Lynn University or Barry University or Nova Southeastern. I don't remember. And we were really, really good friends. And he goes, hey, I'm coming out with this other intern for us. This guy, he's in our cut up scouting coaching division. He wants to be a head coach one day. So we come out, I meet the guy, his name's Eric. I don't remember his last name. We go to the bar where I'm the promoter, and there's 24 girls waiting for us when we get in, because I'm the ones that are getting them in. And so I have my VIP table, you know, it's set up. There's vodka, there's bottles of water. Red Bull didn't exist then. And maybe there's a bottle of tequila or Crown Royal or something. We sit down, like 6 or 8 of the girls kind of lean in, and they're the ones that are going to be with us, you know, for the night. And the other 14 or 16 go and mingle. And, you know, they come back to get a drink, say hi. So it's like 11:15. 12:30, there's a girl on top of Eric. There's a girl on top of Steve. There's a girl on top of me. And the night's going as good as it can get, right? You're living the dream. You're in South Beach. It's open stars. It's an outdoor-indoor party. The music's perfect. The vibe is great. And Eric's like, hey, man, gets up. Hey, man, hey, Dave, it was really great to meet you. I got to go. I'm like, huh? Well, I'm sorry, what? Wait, what? You got a girl from IMG Models? She's a smoke show. She's off the charts, magnificent, drop dead gorgeous. What, where are you gonna go? The girl was like, I could see her face when he said it. I think she thought he meant she was leaving with him. He's like, nah, man, I'm good. I'm like, dude, you drove with me. Like, you know, let me, like, I'll drive you home. We're gonna leave in like, you know, probably 2:30. He's like, nah, man, I'm going to take a cab home. You know, thank you so much for hanging out with me, Steve. I appreciate it. And I look at Steve and I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, what is going on? What, this is so bizarre. And I hear him say, I got to be in the building to cut up tape for Coach Riley. And I want to get a head start on everybody. So I got to be in at work at 4 a.m. And I remember this like it was yesterday. And Eric and I've talked about this 20 times since. He wanted to be a head basketball coach. No model from IMG or Elite or any of the other agencies, or David Kanner, some punk ass running a nightclub and promoter, or his best friend Steve, were going to dissuade him from his end game. So he was willing to sacrifice everything. And you've seen the stories about him. You've read the stories or heard the stories. That was who he was. He knew tunnel vision for as long as it took. No matter what it took ethically and honestly, he was going to outwork everybody to get to where he wanted to be. Now he's the highest paid coach in the NBA, or one of the top two. God bless the guy, right? He's got a beautiful wife, kid, and stuff like that. He's moved on, and God bless him. But that blew me away. And I remember being there, having it happen, and saying to myself, oh, shit. I'm in law school, and I just started the sports agency. Maybe it's time for me to start going home at 12:30 instead of 3:30. And I did. I started sacrificing. I stopped drinking. I stopped going out. I didn't stop smoking cigars because that was my thing back then. Now I don't do that at all because I have kids. But, you know, that was my kind of epiphany moment, was this guy wants something so badly, he's willing to forego a 10. And 10s don't come along very often in life. And he was willing to do whatever it took. So that would be my ultimate takeaway lesson. So hopefully the people that did still stay in and listen to this for an hour and 30 minutes, that would be the takeaway lesson. You got to be willing to lay it all out, and you got to be willing to lose everything to gain the one thing you want that bad.
That was a legendary Spoelstra story.
It's unbelievable. Dude, to this day, it blows my mind. Like, I was like, what do you mean you got to be in the cut up tape at 4 a.m? What? What are you talking about, bro? Like, this girl's ready. She's all over. She loves you. Hey, man, appreciate it.
There's a reason why.
I'm going to take a cab to pay my money. I think he was an unpaid intern in 1995 or 1996. And he was gone. Poof, in the wind. I turned around. He's gone. So, and Steve is still with him. Pat's still there. Heater's still. A very competitive team.
Yeah. But we're going to wrap up this.
Yeah, wrap it up, please. I want to have a drink of water.
Thank you for those.
Of course, I have a glass of water right here.
Thank you to those who listen. Thank you to David Kanner for joining us, sharing the wise words, and just like an
incredible. More importantly, thank you to Matt Engler.
Thank you to Matt Engler.
Sacrifice of sitting on his bed in the corner of his room, bored out of his mother effing mind, listening to me drop F-bomb after F-bomb and not say a word. Matt, if you ever, ever, ever want a job as a sound man where you just listen and don't talk, you're the guy. You're the guy. You did a hell. What's that poster, Matt? Over your left shoulder.
This one?
Yeah.
They're both Derek Jeter.
Never heard of them. Speaking of tens, his wife, Hannah. What a beautiful, intelligent, amazing woman.
So shout out Matt Engler. Follow at the 3P Podcast. He's doing a great job.
3P Podcast. So Matt, you run the Twitter and the IG.
Instagram.
Shit. Speaking of which, I got to tweet out Dontrell's signing.
We're honored to be able to have
Do we follow me on Twitter, guys? Are we following me?
We don't have Twitter, but we have Instagram. Huh?
I'll follow you on my own account.
Yeah, I will follow you on my personal Twitter.
Former president of the United States. What are you, the MyPillow guy? You don't have a Twitter? Did you get banned from the site?
I have a personal.
Oh wait, I know why you don't have a Twitter, because he's a fucking Knicks fan.
That's gonna wrap it up. So thank you all who listened.